Hi, my name is Michael Cream and welcome to a podcast which is focused on the whole world of technology. Today I'm talking to three leading industry experts, all of whom are at Cushman & Wakefield, and we're going to be talking about technology and how this is really shaping the future of the world of property and what we think is going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years. I have with me Adam Stanley, who's a global CIO at Cushman & Wakefield, Norm Dulcet, head of America's Flex Workspace at Cushman & Wakefield, and Kathleen Cahill, who's head of the Global Innovation Hub. They're all based in the US and bring a global perspective to what we're going to talk about. I guess my experience over the last 35 years as a non-tech person has been in the world of property, one where tech has been clunky, it's promised a lot, it's typically under-delivered. It's taken up a lot of time and money of major corporations trying to figure out how to use it. But then over the last few years, I think I've seen that change pretty rapidly. And we now seem to be moving into an era, and have been for a couple of years, where property technology is really beginning to add some great value. Adam, maybe we could start with you and maybe give us a little bit of maybe sort of background on how you got into the property world with your tech knowledge and what your view on the tech scene at the moment is.
Yeah, absolutely. First, thanks for having me join. I think when I joined real estate for the first time just over 6 years ago, the first thing I noticed is, you know, there was an interest in technology, but it was a very nascent interest. And you can see that if you look at some of the numbers, the investment in the space was really, really low. But there is a sense that something was coming because Airbnb and Uber and all these companies had started this kind of gig economy and sharing economy. And I think what was interesting to me is, coming from insurance industry and banking, which is where most of my history was, I saw the same patterns that I was seeing 10 years ago in insurance and 20 years ago in banking, which was, there's this awakening of sorts. And I think that since that point, the awakening has really, really grown. And now it's super, super fast. And I think we went from probably less than $100 million of investment in technology for commercial real estate in 2014 to upwards of $20 billion this year and last year. So it's really, really interesting to see that trajectory.
Great. And Kathleen, you've got a different background. So it can be interesting. Maybe you can tell a little bit about the Global Innovation Hub. But what's your sense of the tech world today as it relates to property?
Definitely. Yeah, I actually similarly came from a banking background, but similar. I was in real estate lending for a large financial institution, and then came to Cushman about 3 years ago. Actually, as Adam and team were kind of thinking through Cushman's partner first approach to technology and seeing the kind of shifts in investment capital that was being put into real estate tech, and all of the problems that you mentioned at the beginning of the call, Michael, are exactly why the Innovation Hub was created, which is that there's tons of money being put into this space, which creates tons of new solutions and a lot of kind of head scratching from landlords, tenants, even ourselves about, okay, how do we kind of get our arms around this and really understand it? And so we saw a massive shift in the type of technology that was kind of coming online. And today what we're seeing is that landlords and tenants are way more open to the adoption of new technologies, whether that's, you know, an IoT sensor in a building, or it's a new type of technology that's helping our brokers interact with clients more readily. We're just seeing people more interested in testing technology, and we're starting to see technologies prove out in terms of use cases, ROI. So people are starting to really understand how these solutions can come together and fit together. And I would say the COVID-19 global pandemic has really only accelerated those trends. And I would also add that I think because we're kind of coming out of those early days, we'll start to see a slowdown in new companies being formed and then increased industry consolidation over the next few years.
Yeah, Kathleen, I would echo, and Kathleen's been phenomenal for Cushman & Wakefield and her ability to kind of find some of those startups out there that are really changing the industry. I think what's fascinating about the pace of change is it also helped us get over one of the old challenges in the industry, which was, you know, people always talked about technology in the industry being very clunky and hard to use. And part of the history was this history of building these massive proprietary technologies. There are firms, you know, both competitors of ours and ourselves, who had spent multiple millions of dollars on technology that frankly wasn't driving value. And I think it was this ego-driven sense that we have to do it ourselves. And now what we're finding is with the, you know, very agile way of partnering, both with small companies, VCs, universities, and some of our larger partners like Salesforce and Microsoft, we're actually finding that we can innovate faster, we can drive value faster, and we have brokers who, shockingly, are really, really excited about using the tools that we're rolling out, and it's really fun to see.
Yeah, I bet it is. Getting brokers to adopt the technology, I guess that's your holy grail, is it?
That is absolutely the holy grail. And not just because I want the brokers to be happy, but it generally is growing revenue. Some of the things that we've done in our retail space that Kathleen's been involved in and our flex space that Norm's been involved in are absolutely growing revenue for the firm and identifying revenue sources that we wouldn't have otherwise been aware of or been able to capture.
So, yeah, with that, maybe, Norm, you could jump in here and obviously talk about what your role is, but also this sort of idea of partnering first. How's that manifest itself in the flex workspace?
Thank you. So I am the head of America's Flexible Workplace. So think co-working, think enterprise space. So a company that would have a floor of flexible space or private offices. Think flex operators, that's all within the realm of my responsibility. So it's interesting, and Adam talks about the partner first strategy. So my background's actually in strategic consulting, and I was very fortunate to work with Adam as a consultant as he was trying to, with others in the firm, kind of figure out the strategy. I don't really have a whole lot to add on this one. I think Adam and Kathleen hit the nail on the head. From my perspective, and from my experience, when I looked at organizations as a consultant with respect to technology and how to implement technology, it really comes down to a couple of things. It's, for me, it's speed to value, and those two words being speed and value. And so when you try to create a big behemoth application or a big behemoth technology at a company, that really kind of degrades the speed to market piece of it. And then the value is like, how valuable is it for, in our case, a broker? Is it going to make that broker's life faster, easier? Are they going to be able to close more business? Are they going to be able to get paid more quickly? So those are the types of things that I think when we look at prop tech that we need to focus on.
Great. And maybe we could get into a couple of, kind of get a bit more specific around a couple of different areas of property. And maybe, Kathleen, we could start thinking about retail. Can you give us some examples of the sort of partnering that goes on that is allowing technology to help retailers? And I guess particularly in the times we're in now, it's going to be increasingly important.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I want to give like a little more of a macro kind of backdrop to that question as well, because I think retail is super interesting right now. I think we always hear the kind of usual tropes or cliches, right, where people, retail's dead because Amazon, right, the end. But I think it's a little bit more complex than that. I think that e-commerce is definitely a kind of contributing factor to the shifts that we're seeing in retail. But there's also the issue that I think the pandemic has really underscored, which is that the retail industry has built a business model that isn't sustainable, is reliant on overproducing, right, and driving markdowns. So in my mind, how this translates to an impact on real estate is that retailers will need to be evaluating more omni-channel strategies and approaches to their business, which means they will have to be more strategic about their brick and mortar footprint as they think through the kind of client customer journey from online to in-store. I think the retailers that figure out that formula are going to be the most successful in the long run. And so what Cushman & Wakefield's done is we actually partnered with one of our industry strategic partners, Fifthwall, to establish a partnership with Placer AI, which is the site selection tool that provides our retail consultants and brokers with data and analytics that help our clients take a more data-driven approach to selecting retail space. I think the one other really interesting trend that we might start seeing at a broader level is that as retailers evaluate their best kind of strategic locations and new uses for retail space, particularly in malls, they're going to start thinking about, right, what are those new kind of business models as a landlord? What new services can I provide to my clients? How do I need to be filling in, right, my spaces? And I think malls in particular are really interesting. We saw that Amazon was talking to Simon Properties about potentially leveraging some of their anchor retail space that would normally be for like a Sears or a Bloomingdale's and start using that as fulfillment centers. And I think COVID has really brought about these new types of business models, things like buy online, pick up in store, or even buy online, pick up curbside, right? I'll just be curious to kind of see how these models shift the role of like the retail landlord over time. And then my team, right, we're always kind of thinking about how Cushman can kind of play a role in advising our clients as they think through these trends.
Can you just talk a little bit more about how the technology is actually helping in those situations? Is it about measuring footfall and ways of doing that, or does it get deeper than that?
Yeah, I think that there's a few things. I think that foot traffic is one. I think consumer spend in the surrounding locations is another, right? So bringing together different types of data and not necessarily data that we even kind of think about as directly correlated to paint that full picture. Maybe it's walkability scores, right? Whatever that is, bringing all of that kind of together to paint a fuller picture. But it also needs to be combined with that retailer's broader strategy, right? So it's not just, a Starbucks, right, would be located in a different location as, you know, a traditional kind of clothing retailer. So making sure you're kind of thinking through those aspects as well.
Okay, so if that's what's happening in the retail world, or a little bit about what's happening in the retail world, Norm, if we flick back to you and talk about the flex space world, I mean, that's just, you know, there's every day I'm reading something different about whether that world's going to benefit from what's going on or it's going to cause it problems. As Adam mentioned at the beginning, companies like WeWork have used technology in a way that hadn't really been used before. Where do you see technology driving that or helping drive that space right now?
Yeah, so that's a great question, but I will probably date myself, but I think it'll be interesting to talk about retail for just a second. I think Kathleen is spot on. I started implementing IBM WebSphere Commerce for a company, a consulting company in 2007. And they were saying then that retail was dead and the mall was dead. And so here we are in 2020 in the midst of a global pandemic. And I think that retail is not dead. The mall is not dead. I think it has to be reimagined. And I think to Kathleen's point, technology will certainly play an important role in that and data as well. But to kind of transition over to flex. So I think the big appeal of the WeWorks of the world and others as it relates to flex in the office was the experience of the members or tenants, right? And so every flex operator out there has an operating platform, an experience app on your phone so that you can do things like book conference rooms and it's not clunky like some of the corporate applications could be from time to time. It's your access to the building. It's how you pay your invoices and it's all on one app. And so I think that's a great appeal now that we live in a society where you know, your phone is basically another appendage. And just the look and feel of the space itself, not the old overhead sort of track lighting that's dim and everyone's sort of in there. It's the experience of the individual in the space was something that the flex world sort of brought to the fore, and it was super appealing. If I look at flexible workplace as another asset class, which I do in my job, then I think you kind of get into some of the commercial real estate fundamentals as it relates to how that space can make money, how that space can grow, how to actually monetize that space. And the balance point, I believe, for flex in the future will be how do we sort of bring the commercial real estate fundamentals and blend that with the experience part of the equation. And technology, I think, has a big part to play. I will make a note that our colleagues in Asset Services recently started a collaboration with a flex operator. And that was born out of a landlord in a building asking Cushman & Wakefield and the flex operator to do just that, right? So how can we leverage the technology and experience of the flex operator to the other tenants in the building besides that flex space? And then from a commercial real estate perspective, how could we leverage the Cushman & Wakefield platform to make that experience better and to integrate that with the flex operator? So I think that's sort of a model that we may use in the future, but technology definitely, and data, which can't be underscored, being able to understand what people are doing in a space or in a particular part of a space, and then being able to line that up with our strategy and deliver for the tenants and members a superior experience, I think is definitely key for the future.
Yeah, Norm, I wanted to just piggyback on some things that you said, because I think it's so critical. And we talk about retail, we talk about industrial, and it's really easy. And it sells newspapers to talk about a particular vertical being dead. But I think what's consistently happening is that people are reimagining how space is used. And I think it's interesting, if you look at Asia, what's always been fascinating is every time I'm in Asia, I'm amazed that you go into a building and it's a mega residence where people are living. It's a mega office where people are working. It's a mega retail where people are shopping, and it's all in one building, and there are theaters and everything. And what that actually gives those landlords is the ability to kind of scale up and down on whatever is more in demand at the time. I think what's changing and what we need to drive is the ability to use data and available information to help landlords better make those decisions. So we always press it as if flex space is the enemy of traditional office space, but actually it's another opportunity. Retail is another opportunity. And our tools must support the ability to kind of gather that information and make decisions across the entire spectrum, because companies will always want to optimize their real estate spend, whether that means more flex space or co-working or changes in their office layouts. We have to be prepared to support having those good conversations that allow them to make the best decisions about how they use their space.
Yeah, Adam, I think that is well said, and I couldn't agree more. And I'll just say that, flexible workplace, flex space is not the thing that's going to disintermediate or disrupt the commercial real estate industry. I think that's the incorrect approach to it. I think if you look at it as another asset class, to Adam's point, that we plug into the bigger space ecosystem, and how do we best do that for our landlords and our tenants? And I think that's the key.
So, Adam, kind of back to you, because I've got a question I want to ask around, I guess sort of moving to the future and what we see happening, because, I mean, we all know that tech is taking data and using it in a way that is transforming the industry. And that's what the three of you have really been focused on. It seems that data underpins everything that we do. The technology that's being developed is using it in more creative ways. We've got digital twins, we've got AR, VR, we've got all these different technologies that we can use in the property industry. But what do you see kind of, your role is to look out over the next 1, 3, 5, 10 years, think about where we should or could be spending money to develop what it is that we're doing with our clients. But I mean, do you see things holding back the industry? Is tech going to continue to drive? What's your sort of sense of it as a non-property person, but after 6 years, yeah, you probably know more than I do. But
no, I mean, it's a fascinating question, and you're spot on. We, my organization, Technology and Data Solutions at Cushman, we focus on the kind of the four tenets. It's optimizing our footprint, creating an environment for client-focused investments that drive value for clients, looking for innovation, and actually advising our clients. And I think one of the things that a lot of our clients are really asking us about is, help us see through this morass, help us see through all of these, thousands of startups out there that are coming and trying to sell us products and figure out what actually makes sense. And I think the key for every company is to assess three things. First of all, is how strong is your foundation? Because if you don't have the right foundation, there's really nothing you can do. You can develop great products and services, but if you don't have kind of a cloud-first, mobile-enabled foundation that actually allows your people to work wherever and whenever and however they want, it's going to be really hard to roll out any type of tools to them. Second question that you have to ask is, how strong is your data? Because as you intimated, all of our tools are made more powerful by data. So what's the quality of your information? How much of your information is actually collected electronically versus in the brains of lots of people around the world? But how's that quality of your data? And then three, are you as an organization willing to take some risk in an agile manner that possibly involve cannibalizing some of your business? And it's ironic that real estate still struggles with this, because it's so obvious to see the benefits of paying attention and more importantly, the detriments of not paying attention. Because you can talk about Kodak all day. You can talk about Blockbuster Video all day. There are hotels that are closing a lot these days, even pre-COVID, because of competition with Airbnb. So if you can answer those three questions, how strong is your foundation? How strong and of high quality is your data? And how willing is your organization to be agile in their thinking about the future? That's, in my mind, the three simple steps of success. And I think that the companies that survive, not just COVID, but this recession in general, are going to be those companies that can stand up and hand on heart, say that they've thought about those three particular ideas.
Interesting. And Kathleen, if we go to you, what's your, you know, in the world that you're operating in, are you seeing things coming that are going to really change or push the industry, maybe in the direction that Adam's suggesting that we need to go in terms of being able to cannibalize part of our business and come out ahead, as it were?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Adam is spot on, and I couldn't agree more with what he said. I think that the tech kind of delivery model or the digital ways in which we engage with clients, right, all of that becomes table stakes, right? In the same way that you're not going to go into a physical bank to open a bank account, you're not going to open a bank account with someone who doesn't let you view your bank account information online, right? All of that becomes table stakes and expectations. And then the data and analytics is your competitive edge, right? Whether you're a landlord, a tenant, or Cushman & Wakefield, right? Having clean, high quality, unique data that you can bring to people proactively, or you can make proactive decisions on, is how you'll stay ahead. And then you get those two parts of the puzzle right, and you can start, right, building out new products, new services, new capabilities, right, that were never possible kind of before. And I think the pandemic also really opened up kind of new opportunities, right, in that space, where all of a sudden the experience of people in spaces, whether it's office or retail, starts to become blurred. So what is the role of the landlord right through that experience now? And I think we'll really start to kind of see some interesting models change over time.
Yeah, I would agree. And I've certainly seen with the people that I deal with and talk to, the need for, if we just talk about office space for a second, you know, the need for data around who needs to use an office and how, is becoming incredibly important to companies who are going to have to make some very difficult decisions about lease events and capital planning in a fairly cash-strapped environment that we can't quite see the end of yet. So is that what you see in the flex space, Norm? Are companies more and more using data to think about the decisions that they're making, and are businesses asking for that more and more of the real estate teams?
Yeah, I think if we look at what I call the bigs in the flex operator space, I just use WeWork as an example, since everyone knows who that is. A part of their technology platform is gathering that kind of data in their own spaces. So I had the opportunity recently to tour some of their new spaces here in Chicago, and they do study those things. They study, okay, in this space, where do people spend their most time, and, you know, how many people congregate in a certain area, and like how frequently do they go to the coffee machines? How frequently do they use the conference rooms, and at what times? And that's all data that I think, if you look at from a building perspective, right, that's all data that drives efficiency in the building. And so those are the types of technology solutions that our flex operators bring to the table, and some things that we can look at ourselves and things that we can leverage through, you know, alliances or partnerships or collaborations to help the whole occupier ecosystem in a building, not just those folks that are in Flex. And I think it's really, really important to state that, you know, Flex is, when we look at from a talent, you know, savings and agility perspective, flexible workplace and flexible workspaces bring that to the table. But it's a part of a broader ecosystem. And I think that moving forward, we've got to start to think about it as an ecosystem. And it's really about the choice of the occupier or the choice of the landlord when to leverage different asset classes of space to maximize the value, number one, for the landlord or the occupier, and B, to enhance the experience of the workforce that's utilizing the space.
I think, Norm, like, that's a really good point. And I feel like you and Adam have both touched on this throughout kind of our commentary, which is that in general, it seems like data unlocks the ability to basically make space more conscious of the person who's actually occupying the space, right? I think in general, real estate kind of didn't always think super thoroughly about that, right, that concept. And so I think to create more people-driven spaces or spaces that serve the people who actually occupy them is something that we'll see over time. And like having access to right data only helps you make better decisions in that space.
Yeah, Kathleen, and I think you're correct. And I'll put on my consulting hat for 30 seconds and say that necessity drives a lot of this, right? So we're in the global pandemic. We're, you know, gateway cities, especially where a lot of the office space is, we're shut down. And so now we're trying to return to work and we're trying to figure it out. And I think Cushman & Wakefield has done a really great job with, you know, recovery readiness and back to office protocols and all that good stuff. But when we look at the new office ecosystem where the, you know, the corporate headquarters is at the center, but then you've got all these hubs that work from home, work from third place, it's really trying to figure that out. And it's really hard to do without having some good data, right, around like what people want and how to best utilize that ecosystem to the value and maximum benefit of everyone.
Thanks, guys. And maybe just to sort of wrap this up, I want to give the last question to you, Adam. I mean, one of the things that struck me as I've listened to the three of you is you obviously all come from outside of the property industry. You've got very different backgrounds, and because you're in the technology space, I've always thought it must be difficult for a non-property group, i.e. a technology group, to understand our slightly bizarre industry and figure out how to use technology to improve it. How do you think about your team and what it is you're building from that point of view?
There's a cheat that I have, and I've used it throughout my career. And it's basically a mentor of mine years ago said the only way a CIO can ever be successful is if they constantly think from the perspective of the CEO. And if you really study CEOs from industry to industry, from company to company, the value that they're looking for is actually incredibly consistent. So as an organization, we focus on what are we doing to grow revenue? What are we doing to improve EBITDA or profitability for the company? What are we doing to effectively manage down risk? And what are we doing to improve client and colleague satisfaction? So those four value drivers are kind of underpinning everything that we do. And if you continue to focus on those business outcomes and not just kind of the endpoint technology solutions, you actually can start to change hearts and minds. So instead of walking into the CFO's office and saying, here's a new shiny red tool that I'd love to roll out, I'm saying we have a challenge with growth in this particular segment of our industry. Here's a solution that we think can actually help. Here's how we will implement it. This is what it will cost. And this is roughly what we think the value will be. And if you have those conversations time and time again, I like to say that the muscle memory of our business colleagues starts to improve and they start to think, okay, now every time Norm and Kathleen come into the room, I am going to listen with the ear of revenue, EBITDA, risk management, client satisfaction, and I'm going to understand what they're trying to present to be better. And I think that's how we advance using data and technology as an asset as opposed to just something exciting that the Wall Street Journal is talking about that particular morning.
Fine. Well, that's very sage advice. And is absolutely how I think everyone should think about it. You've got to, it's got to make a difference to the bottom line in a way that's sustainable. So, Adam, Kathleen, and Norm, it's been a great pleasure talking to the three of you. I think we need to draw it to a close there. But thanks very much, and look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.